Off the Ball.
GAA.
They don't depend on Alan Connolly. But I do think that in a big game, he could be the guy that scores a goal that changes a game.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Many thanks for taking a break from the Irish summer to join us on this live stream this week from the Hurling Pod after the semi-finals this weekend. Cork and Limerick meeting in the semis for the first time in the last four since their classic in 2018 even, while Kilkenny and Clare will clash for the third successive year at the semi-final stage. Shane O'Donnell with 1-4 for Clare. Very impressive performance as they beat Wexford by 12 points. Wexford left to Rory O'Connor's red card at the end of the first half as the Banner bounced back from their Munster final defeat. Patrick Horgan now top of the pile with TJ Reid and championship scoring 699 points each. They're both going to go north of 700 at Croke Park in 2 weeks' time. And it was a pretty workmanlike Cork performance. We'll talk about Pat Ryan's comments after the game as well as they beat Dublin by 26 points to 21. It is the Hurling Pod. It is with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. James Gale, Paul Murphy, we're seeing a bit too much of each other this week, aren't we, Paul?
Oh, bordering too much, is it? after we left Circle K with chicken fillet rolls there the other night, I think that was enough for the week. But sure, look, here we are. Has to be done.
Well, it's created a very important online thread in the hours and days that have happened since Podge Collins was directing us around Limerick. You were there in the driver's seat and he was saying, turn left, turn left,
30, go left 13 again. Left turns in Limerick. He refused to turn right.
Another left turn, it appears, to get to Circle K. We went to a 24/7 Circle K. After we got back to the hotel, I actually marvelled at the fact my roll in only cost £4.50. I got used to Dublin prices when it came to a chicken fillet roll. Best part of £7. Stuck it up. And now I've got an encyclopedia under that tweet of every chicken fillet roll that's available for €5 or less in Dublin. So it's been incredibly useful to actually tweet that out. I don't know. Skell, did you enjoy your crisps and chicken fillet roll at 3 a.m.?
I loved it. Because I was starving. I get an awful, I suppose, dose of the munchies after a few pints. So Podge's inside knowledge was critical at that time. Because there was nothing else that mattered more in life than getting that chicken roll. So fair play to him. He sorted us out.
Yeah, a few pints is a nice way to put it. We were in
Dolan's. I have to apologise. I didn't even interrupt as well. I have to apologise. I spilled Fanta all over his... I didn't even realise I did it.
Myself and Podge were sitting there, and as the only sober person there, I can testify to this. We were sitting there, next thing a bottle of Fanta ends up in the middle of us upside down, spilling everywhere. And myself and Podge went, what was that? And we looked up and like Skell was after punching the bottle of Fanta onto us. But like he was so consumed with eating the chicken roll, he hadn't noticed. He'd launched his bottle of Fanta in the middle of us. We're like, let's just not interrupt him now. He's in his chicken fillet roll. But yeah, we also have to say as well, Will, in fairness, the hotel we stayed in, an alarm went off about 5 a.m.
Oh, man.
The loudest alarm I've heard in life. Jumped up, stood up in the bed. I got such a fright. Thought it was my room. Didn't know what was going on. Spoke to you the following day. You were like, that was the loudest alarm I've ever heard. I met Ashley Riley in the car park. She was like, what was with that alarm? Jeez, it was so loud. Scale text into the group. What alarm?
To set the scene on this, it was 5:30, 6 o'clock. We'd had about 2 hours sleep at that stage. I thought I was dreaming it initially, and it was so persistent that I actually started to get dressed because I thought the hotel was going to be evacuated at that point because it just didn't stop. And this was piercing scale. This was nearly knocking the windows out. In fact, at breakfast, I got up and bumped into a few people that were part of the crew and whatever else. It's all anyone was talking about. The table beside us were talking about it. They were in the room beside where it happened. I think it turned out some Americans who were going to Shannon Airport for an early flight had left the door open and the steam had knocked off the fire alarm. And it knocked off the fire alarm in every single room in the hotel. It's all anyone talked about. And James Gale literally goes, what alarm?
I tell you. And the reasoning behind that was not because there was excessive amounts of alcohol. It's because I'm grown accustomed to children. So what happens is they have the most piercing cries or whatever. Like, so when you have children, your sleep is very, very disjointed. So you can literally sleep on call. So when I got a night away, I was like, earth, you know. If the sky was falling, you know what I mean? I wouldn't wake. So, yeah, I was happy out. I thought you were messing with me, to be honest, actually.
Overall...
I was working my room.
Well, yeah. That's the only logic I can think of is you were the one room that it didn't actually send people out of. Gary Farrell was there. I met him on the night. Great podcast during the week. Really enjoyed the night at Dolan's. Made the trip across from Kilkenny to go to Limerick. Yep. That was commitment from Gary. He had to take a day off work as well as part of it. So fair play to Gary for coming across. Skell, what will probably impress as well, I can't off the top of my head remember, you were talking about biscuits about 3 weeks ago, the ones you weren't allowed in your house. What came to your hands during the podcast?
Well, you know, it was great timing because a packet of club milks and chocolate Kimberleys came and they were devoured. They came in very handy at around half tin. It was kind of a fair scene. Like, I think if anyone looked at us and saw, right, there's 3 or 4 pints at the table, plus we're all chewing on chocolate Kimberleys. No, so it was quite enough. You wouldn't classify that as bar food now or pub grub, but yeah, it hit the spot. And it just got us enough time until we got the chicken roll. Otherwise, we've been quite cantankerous form, believe you me, being angry.
Well, it filled the gap wonderfully. So if anyone missed the show on Dolan's, it's up in two parts at the moment for free on the Off the Ball YouTube. So the first part is us having a chat and then kind of an hour of Sean Ogg, maybe an hour and a bit of Sean Ogg O'Halpine, who was magnificent. I think I asked him 4 questions in the hour that he was on stage and he just went for it. You probably saw a few of the clips. Henry Shefflin, hardest player he ever had to mark. And the second part was a preview of the weekend, but there's a chat more generally about the hurling championship and where the teams are at. And of course, a very awkward back and forth between Podge and Skell, because Podge listens every week, arrives as a guest and goes, you know what, I actually take exception, Skell, with what you said last week, and I disagree fundamentally. And the rest of us just kind of sat there in the panel and went, this will end at some point, won't it?
Well, once I heard that, I said, well, ding, ding. We're on. We're on, I said. Which is no harm. It's absolutely no harm.
I thought
it was good. It was a good discussion. Definitely wasn't a heated debate. It was just a good discussion back and forth.
Which ended with me
kind of in
boxing
back and Podge into a corner about the third defense.
But yeah, the boys are still friends afterwards, which is good news. The semi good news, because I feel bad every time I mention this in front of Skell. If you couldn't go to Limerick, we're coming to Dublin. And I saw Dublin's Fair City had also put a comment underneath the Dolan's post saying he was looking forward to going to the Bord Gáis. So he's going to be there. Unfortunately, due to a scheduling conflict, Skell can't be there. I am going to try and call him, though, while we're on stage. But we're going to the Bord Gáis Theatre for our second live show of the summer. It's going to be a day later than last year. So it's the Friday before the All-Ireland final, which is July the 19th. Paul Murphy will be there. Joe Canning is going to be there. And then we'll be announcing some more guests over the next few days. We're going to put the tickets up as quickly as I think the page is ready to go. So I think that could be tomorrow, could be Tuesday. So keep an eye on the Off the Ball social media. Keep an eye on our social media. I'm sure we'll share it as well. We're going back to the Bord Gáis Theatre, live show, All-Ireland preview. Skell won't be there, so I'm resisting putting the hurling pod onto it. But that's one to look forward to. But both of you, anyway, before we move on to the actual games from the weekend, you both enjoyed your trip. Skell, I'll give you a first shout to Limerick at the weekend.
I always like engaging in those live shows because it's great. Like, obviously, we've a bit of crack here, but there's a different energy, obviously, to doing it live. So, like, seeing the people there, you know, even the interactions, you know, with some of the Limerick crew shouting at us and some of the laughter, some of the face-to-face interactions between us as guests, etc. Very enjoyable. I would do them all day long. You know what I mean? I'd say, Murph, you're probably the same as me. That's just it's different vibe. It's a very professional setup. It's very well ran. The venue was lovely. It was nice and, as I say, intimate because the crowd was right beside you. I thought they interacted fierce well with us, in fairness. Mm. They some of them were shouting in a bit of abuse at Joe Murph about Limerick and Kilkenny, huh?
Yeah. I know it was great, though. Like, I mean, Jesus, I think for us anyway, we record so much of it remotely that when we all come together, it's great. But also the crowd, like people passing in by, kind of telling us where they listen to it. One lad was saying, actually, I have to mention one fella. He won the Kilkenny jersey and he said he had to take it because his girlfriend's from Kilkenny. And afterwards, I was asking what part of Kilkenny she's from. He goes, no, she's actually only working up in Tier Lawn. I was like, okay, so she's not actually from Kilkenny. No, she's from Mexico, he goes. And I went, right. So you took the Kilkenny jersey because your girlfriend's working in Tier Lawn, but she's actually from Mexico and you're from Limerick. He was like, yeah, that's exactly it. So he has to be mentioned. So there's one fella. But no, look, the crowd was great. Like, I mean, sitting down chatting with Sean Ogg was great. Podge and Leo were outstanding. And like, even after the whole thing, like, sure, we sat down for about 6 hours and spoke, you know, about hurling, about the night, about everything, just chatting away. And it was great to chat to the likes of, you know, particularly, I say, like, I know Podge, but the likes of Leo. Why would have never sat down with him before, even? And just chatting to people who listened to the pod after the game, hearing their opinions, people turned up in colours, flags, jerseys. For people who maybe listened to the pod, the audience was full of people in, like, jerseys and actually had flags and stuff, which was great. It was brilliant crack.
It felt like up for the match, more, didn't it?
It actually did, and I was kind of going, God, this is great crack. So no, I really enjoyed it. And you come away from it, you're tired after, like, you know, because obviously you're engaging for the whole thing, but like you'd be buzzing after it, because like you're just talking to hurling people about hurling, you know, their own opinions of it, and it's great, it's brilliant crack.
Yeah, the only one thing I would say again as we move off this was that the moment that really caught me, I was told that there was a young Kilkenny fan towards the front. And you were keeping a jersey for Murphy, because we had five jerseys to give away, and you were like, let's give one of them out to him. And I was like, that's perfectly okay. The house lights went up. So the house lights were incredibly bright, as you probably see in the video. So we couldn't see past maybe the end of the stage. The house lights come up when Asher Riley is about to ask questions. I did not realise the Kilkenny fan was maybe about 7 or 8 years of age. And you can imagine the amount of swearing there was, particularly in the first half. My face just literally dropped. I went, oh.
Yeah, Jack from Listowel, that's who it was. Yeah.
You were embarrassed. You were embarrassed. I was, man, I was explaining about how I was wiping my arse with a piece of paper. Like, what kind of example is that?
It was a good reset button when, like, yeah, you were talking about that, and next thing, go to the crowd for questions, and Jack asks, who's your favourite player, in a very young voice, and we went, we forgot where we were for a while there, didn't we?
Oh God. Right, let's get straight into it, because this question cuts through probably a lot. Connor, given how poor both, obviously meant both, quarterfinals were, the early Saturday slot were just fine. You were there, Murph, covering it for Off the Ball.
I don't think it really made a huge difference, to be honest. It was great atmosphere around the place, particularly for Cork and Dublin. Like, the Cork fans really travelled for it. Even in Thurles itself, the square was fairly packed as well. Look, to be honest, I kind of got over that earlier in the week when you heard what the fixtures were going to be. Just kind of moved on with it. Maybe other people felt differently about it. I said at the roadshow, you know, I think the GAA should always strive at all times to have our games at the prime time, let's say, for showing them. But if it's for one weekend, look, let's just get on with it. And the games, look, at the end of the day, the games, both games had a period where they were decent or they were good, but they did peter out massively, you know. So, you know, it was quite enough. By the time the last game finished, like, there wasn't much of an atmosphere in Thurles. Now, Steph and Colin Minogue were talking, we're saying, like, would there be potential there where you maybe take the quarterfinals out of Thurles? Like, as in, if you had Wexford and Clare, let's say in Nolan Park on the Sunday, for example, which is a bit more conducive to a smaller crowd, like 45,000. If the quarterfinals aren't drawn, that maybe, you know, do we bring it towards a Portlaoise, Nolan Park, somewhere like that, where it actually, Tullamore, even, where it might actually hold a more comfortable crowd and build the atmosphere? Because if the atmosphere is good, it usually feeds into the game as well. I mean, we saw the last few minutes of Cork and Dublin, and okay, Dublin, when the game was over, started to go at Cork, but the tension started to rise, and you felt there was a bit of an atmosphere. It was probably the first time there was atmosphere in the game. So just wondering, like, you know, I thought Cahill made a good point just to say that, should we potentially bring these in future? Not to be double-headers. Double-headers sometimes as well in their own right can be a flop. Do we maybe bring them to smaller grounds that can be a tighter capacity on it and make for an atmosphere? And maybe that might feed into the game.
Yeah, I'll bring in this in a second, Scale. My first thought would be, based on the conversations we had, and I didn't want to out Podge Collins at any point. Podge was representing the GPA on the call last weekend, so we kind of had a bit of info about the vote. And unfortunately, we'd recorded the bloody pod before the vote actually took place, so we had to kind of keep it under our hat until the vote was finished on Sunday night. But the reality is, I think that's the last year the Tailteann Cup semi-finals take place on the Sunday afternoon as a doubleheader at Croke Park. 10,000 people were there this afternoon. I think there was definitely a very split opinion among the counties about whether it should be moved to Saturday or not. I personally thought it was a bad idea to move it with 6 days' notice. You had the added thing about the Fela. I think a lot more Wexford fans would have went. I saw pictures of people who were at the Fela at the weekend watching on the big screens at the Centre of Excellence in Wexford that would have definitely went to Thurles if these were standalone fixtures on separate days, or if it had fit more nicely. I don't know. I think scale standalone fixtures will probably happen. 30,000-ish, I think they said in the telly yesterday, were at the games. Wexford would definitely have had more fans had they been able to play on the Sunday. And I think, a bit like Murph's idea, rather than this being a doubleheader in Thurles and in dead slots on the Saturday, why not maybe have one game on the Saturday, one on the Sunday, put them in a provincial ground, and you will get a decent crowd of both.
I agree with you. I think, I suppose, in GA terms, what we do sometimes is we wait for, you know, whether it's a rule change, you know, a fixture scheduling or a structure of championship, we have to go through it to understand it, to then change it, right? So I think we've gone through this now 2 years in a row, you could say, with the clash with the Talchin Cup. I don't remember that there had been a clash with Fela last year or any issues, but this being a first. But I think now where we stand, like we're now well-formed, if you know what I mean, that there's an issue with this weekend, this particular weekend. A, there's an issue with the venue. I think Murphy, you're spot on. We need to provide more of an atmosphere for those games and give them more of an intimate atmosphere. I just think straight away, like you were saying, Wexford is a great idea. You know, if you had Dublin and Cork back in Tullamore again, you know, that's a nice idea too, that you get a bit of a humbling of a crowd there. Same thing with the weekend. I think they should be given prime time slots. And I can't be accused of bias, you know, because I'm talking about the All-Ireland Senior Quarterfinals versus the Talent Cup with respect. You know what I mean? So the Senior Quarterfinals are a bigger, I suppose, draw on competition than what was played today on a Sunday. And the same would be said if this was All-Ireland's football quarterfinals versus the Drumtona, the same thing has to be said. You know, we can't be completely biased here. So I think next year what will happen, it'll be looked at because it's got so much publicity. It's got an awful lot of airtime, whether it be the Sunday game, radio, etc. Probably too much airtime than you'd like. I suppose even the matches themselves, the actual fixtures, the teams, it got overshadowed, to be honest. I think everyone will agree with that because the structure was the overriding topic of conversation this week and still is to a degree. So I'd say where the GAA stand now, they'll say, right, we've been warned, we're that way today, and we've been informed, so there will be change. Now, what that change is, probably, like I said, will probably a restructuring, switch around the weekend, and then probably individualise each game into provincial grounds, which makes a better atmosphere. So yeah, they've been informed. Time for change.
Yeah. Oh, look, the added complication of all the things with the URC and so on as well. I did agree with Ursula Jacob on the coverage as well, by the way. So I flicked the coverage on, whatever, half an hour before throwing Cork and Dublin yesterday, and the first 10-12 minutes were dominated on talking about the vote and the scheduling. Mm. And Ursula was just like, can we just talk about the two games which are coming up? And you're there thinking, yeah, that's exactly what should happen, because nothing was changing 20 minutes, 25 minutes away from the game. Even that can be a end of the second match conversation as opposed to dominating at the start. So the news is we get into talking about the games, but I can't resist looking at Keith Scanlon's comment here. Can't wait to hear how bad Clare are again, like every week on this podcast. They'll talk more about Limerick than anyone else, even though they weren't playing this weekend. So right, let's kick off the discussion of the games by talking about Limerick then, Paul Murphy. Yeah. They're going to have too much for Cork, aren't they?
Oh, God almighty. You can't please some people. Just can't beat them. I don't know how many times we've actually praised Clare here, and then, I don't know. Do you even address it?
I don't know. They'll be going on now, right? They'll be going on now until I just turn against them entirely. just turn against them entirely. Because we praise them an awful lot. Like, yeah. We praise Lohan. We praise the panel. We praise the subs to bring on. You know, we praise them individually. We praise some of the matches. Obviously, a lot of the matches they're involved in. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think... But what we do is we rightfully question some things. Like, we question every team.
Every team.
This time last year, we were questioning Limerick's panel depth and the injuries they were going through. Do you remember with Declan Hannah missing centre-back? We questioned it. And they answered the question very well. This year, we're questioning the Clare defence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, I am, sorry. Me, personally. Maybe not necessarily yourself, but... And now they have to answer a question. So, if you can't do that, well, Lord, geez, we may as well give up the gig.
You know what I mean? Jesus.
Okay. Clare 228, Wexford 119 before Skell entered for Dublin Clare. So Skell, did the Clare full back line answer the questions you had of them at the weekend?
This was a hard question. This is a genuine question, right? And I think at the beginning when Conor Lean got the point, I said, "Oh, geez, that's a fair feat for a cornerback." But ultimately, like my question, remember, Will, was about the 1-1 defence, and then playing the ball out from the back, let's say. So, you know, Hogan hits the ball across. That's where the penalty drives from. Once the sending off happened, the whole game kind of petered out because Cleary became free. You know what I mean? So they had a sweeper to a degree and, you know, it became quite easy for them. So I'd say they didn't answer the questions fully just yet. Probably did okay in parts, if you like. Did okay in parts. But also, there was bits of question too still. It still remains. I'm not going to change it at the moment because I need to see them for a full 6-on-6 for a full 70 minutes. That didn't happen, obviously. They got half the game with a free man in their backs without being under too much pressure. And an awful lot of the ball that was delivered in, you might remember, was just high ball, route one stuff.
Yeah.
But it wasn't exactly, it was overly directed, nearly like the historical game whereby it was just lump it down on top of McDonald and hope for a break, which is probably all you could do at the time because you couldn't play into angles with the sweeper covering. So, look, were they tested? Not an awful lot, to be honest. You know what I mean? Quilligan pulled off a couple of, you know, fairly straightforward saves, but they were from good distances. So I don't think they were overly stretched, to be honest. So, yeah, they'll get challenged an awful lot more in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. Oh, let there be no doubt. Now, obviously, look, the vast majority of questions that are coming in And you can take it up, Murph. The two yellow cards that Rory O'Connor got. So Rory O'Connor was in a... I guess he was in a role where he had to be the link man as much as the scorer with the way that Wexford had set up, because they put Chin right up forward, Conor McDonald far up, Keane Byrne was kind of coming out a little bit, but Rory was taking the long-range scores and he was kind of having to carry the game to Clare from the middle third quite a bit. His first yellow card, do you want to take that one first? Because I'm guessing the referee thought his arm had come in quite high. Maybe on the replay it felt like the yellow was a little bit harsh. Certainly that's what Keith Rossiter felt after the game. What's your take on yellow card number one?
No, it wasn't a yellow card at all. Like, even in the moment, ball was thrown in, I was watching it, it didn't look any way like it was a high tackle. Like it came diagonally down from, let's say, shoulder onto chest into stomach area. It didn't look like it was around the neck at any stage. I think it was David Reedy. I can't really remember. Or was it Mark Rogers? One or the other. But they kind of fell anyway and looked as if they were going to play it on. Like, they weren't even overly aggrieved. Neither were the Clare players. So, like, I mean, straight out, first yellow. No, it wasn't the yellow. It was actually, I said 7 seconds. It was actually less than 7 seconds that it happened as well. Not saying that a time in a game negates when you give a card or not, but it was, the ball was thrown in, players ran in, passed each other. It was a free, fine, no yellow card. But no, you couldn't.
Yeah.
You, Skell, what do you reckon?
I've no disagreement, Will, to be honest. Like, And again, remember we were talking about referees, etc., and we're saying trying to put ourselves in their position. So obviously, it's, as you said, Murph, it's 5 or 6 seconds in the game. The ball hasn't travelled. It's right there in front of the referee. So in terms of distance, he's probably, is he 10, 15 meters away from the incident? And it's pretty clear for me that it hits the shoulder. And I don't know, is he trying to set a precedent, let's say, that he had this game under control and nothing was to get out of the hand? But that's the fastest yellow card I've ever seen, to be fair.
Yeah.
And was it warranted for me? No, it wasn't. And the second one, yes, that's fair. That's a late tackle. You know, that's down top of the hands. I have no issue with that. That was also Reedy, I believe. So Reedy got fouled for both of them. But the first is a no. And in fairness, lads, it had a massive bearing on the game. You can't tell me.
Yeah. And like, but the second one, I think, to be fair, like a little bit, look, whether you feel aggrieved over the first one or not, you still have to have it in your head and play cute for the rest of the game then. That, like, is in a case where you're going into tackle Reedy there. It's to an extent a bit of a lost cause. You might get a hook, great to put pressure on him, but no need to leave the hurling because you're now playing with fire. So the second one, in fairness, regardless of whether you think it was or it wasn't, you're on the yellow card now. You have to mind yourself, you know. So the second one, there was a bit of silliness as well. But I feel bad for Rory O'Connor, though, really, in the overall scheme of things, because he was the only forward really kind of taking it to Clare at that stage. Well, you know, a few players, Keane Byrne had gotten a score at that stage, but like the spread of scores, Lee Chin had got a few frees, Conor Hearn and Conor Foley had been on the score list. But in terms of the forwards, you know, Rory O'Connor was the man making the running. So I felt bad for him there. And really, you felt going in at halftime, okay, Wexford are in with a shot here, but you were expecting Clare to come out in the form that they were in to come out and just stretch the lead, and they did. So it really was the turn of the game.
Yeah, was it
a draw game? Was it 10 points? Sorry, was it 13 points to 110?
At the time, I think.
So did Clare get the last two of the first half then to go in, 15 to 110, did they? It was definitely close at the point he was sent off anyway.
Because Dave McInerney had obviously was still on the black card at the time.
Yeah.
And I think Wexford had pulled it back level. Didn't O'Connor goes off? And sure, if it's 110 to 13 points, Clare outscored them, 215 to 9 points from that? So that has a huge bearing. And like, you know, in terms of the way Clare play, let's say, with the way they keep possession also, if you don't have numerical parity in the middle, you know, you're under serious bother. So they didn't. That's where trouble happens.
Yeah, it was 15 to 110 at halftime to Clare.
I like when McInerney comes back on, they just absolutely start to control the game at that point, Skell.
No, they do. But to go back for a second, when I was talking with the 215 to 9 points after, I'm thinking, if you were in the referee shoes there and you were going out through the game and Rory does the second tackle on Reedy, would you give him a chicken warning? I don't think anyone would give up with that, would they?
The one on Reedy?
The second one. The first one, okay, if from our vantage point at the moment, if he does the tackle on Reedy, it's a yellow, but if you turn around and say, look, that's your last warning and let him go, I think, would people give up with that? I think with the way he received the first yellow, I wouldn't say too many people would be, you know, scratching their heads on that one. But it just makes me think that obviously Murphy fully believed then he deserved the yellow for the first one.
Well, that was it. Yeah. I don't think...
I believe it.
Do you know the way sometimes like people talk of referees balancing it out where a tackle goes in and maybe 2 or 3 seconds later he went, feck, I should have blown a free for that. So you blow a free down the other end, that balances out. But I think in the instant he was fully convinced that that was yellow and that was the right thing to do. So I don't think there was any currency there for Rory O'Connor.
Yeah, right.
I think as well, in fairness, I know people are saying maybe they wouldn't have given a yellow for either. I think you can see the grimace on Rory's face when it zooms in. It's almost that moment where he goes, ah,
yeah,
I've just done something stupid when I was already in a yellow card. You can disagree or agree with the first yellow, but he knew he was walking a tightrope at that stage and he just went in overzealous. Once he chopped down, he was gone.
And it's just amazing to see O'Connor getting 2 yellows and then seeing Sutcliffe get away with 30 seconds of lunacy.
That was madness, right? Go on. Talk about Sutcliffe here, because Dublin, like, they probably weren't going to score 2 goals, but they needed to try and work that free at that point.
Yeah,
he is incredibly lucky it wasn't a red card and that free wasn't reversed. How did he get away with it?
So, correct me if I'm wrong here now. So, there's a bit of moving back and forth, trying to make a bit of space, and there's a bit of tugging and dragging. Fair enough, right? But he digs Coleman, right, with the hurl. That's straight red. Then he goes over, the helmet comes off, and then I think he throws what I would class as a minor headbutt on Dalton. Is that right? I'm not seeing things there, like.
Well, I'll be honest. They weren't showing replays inside in Thurles, so.
Oh, you were sorry, Murph. You were live. Yeah. So basically, obviously, there was a high behind angle, right? So you can see this.
I just saw lads dropping. I couldn't see what.
You could see, in fairness, well, one of them was a pull and drag over on the one side. Fair enough.
I saw one of the Cork boys. Yeah, it was a Coleman or someone that was kind of at Sutcliffe. Yeah. I thought Sutcliffe swinging back. Yeah.
Correct. So Sutcliffe gives it to him with the hurl, right? Yeah. And it's right in front of the umpires. And for me, that's the yellow card. Then there's a bit of tackling, right? His helmet comes off somehow. It's just through the whole schmozzle. He gets up then, right? Dalton's walking over towards the referee and umpire. Sutcliffe comes over and actually hits him ahead. Like, Sutcliffe has no helmet and Dalton has a helmet.
Right.
Yeah, get that, right? And he hits him a nut. And I'm like, thinking, oh, he's definitely getting the road here.
Yeah.
like
nothing.
I don't know.
Right. It happened right in front of the officials. So the umpire
I know.
Behind the goal, and the referee is no distance away because the referee is kind of moved because he just wants to be in line with the free, which he knows that Dublin are going to drop in at that point. It's just one of those bizarre moments. Now, obviously, because Cork win by 5 points, it's probably a little bit forgotten about at the end of it, but bloody hell.
He's gotten away with 2 ones now this year. The one he did on Kilkenny, I can't remember the player.
The blind hit on Kilkenny.
Kilkenny was the more, but that was bad too. That was the intention also. You know what I mean? So there's form there, lads. Mm. Yeah, it was. Yeah, Kilkenny, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I know we're bouncing around here, but here's James Kearney. Shane O'Donnell took 8 to 9 steps for the goal. He definitely takes too many steps, I would argue. But the argument maybe is that he takes additional steps after he's been fouled. Where are you on it, Murph?
Yeah, look, there's two arguments there that people can choose from. One is simply, look, after he takes the too many steps, you blow the whistle and you give the free in and that's it. I suppose the other way, that when the referee has the arm out looking for the advantage, is that Shane O'Donnell took 3 steps. He took 3 steps when he goes to pass Matthew O'Hanlon. And Matthew O'Hanlon's holding him back. At this stage then, Shane O'Donnell is basically not gaining any ground. He's just kicking, trying to get away from Matthew O'Hanlon. And at the stage, Matthew O'Hanlon lets go of him. He throws the ball back into the hurl and goes. He did take 9 steps. But I think the referee is looking at this from the point of view of trying to get the advantage to keep the play going. But this is the conundrum here for people, where they go, am I comfortable with someone taking 9 steps when the rule is 4? Do I want a free taken or do I want the play to progress? It's a tough one. It is a tough one. But I'm not saying that, oh yeah, the rule is 4 steps, but you know, you should just let players play it on. I think a bit of discretion has to be used here to go, the referee is trying to allow flow to the play here. He's trying to and give the advantage to the attacker, who quite clearly is on the front foot here. No pun intended, but he's on the front foot here as he's attacking. And as a defender, if I was to be in the defenders union here, I'd be saying, you know, hold on to him and just let him get the free or whatever. But Shane O'Donnell did well to get away and create a goal opportunity. It's a tough one, but I think it kind of doesn't reward the cynicism if you let him play on. So if I was a defender, I'd be happier to see him get the free and pop the ball over the bar. Because if I know Shane O'Donnell's running at me in a one-on-one situation there, I'm happy for Tony Kelly to stand over a free and take a free and pop a point over. So the question for me then is, do you ask, well, what is actually in the advantage of the person holding the ball in their hand and what's in the advantage of the team? Probably just letting them on. Now, the rules don't cater for that. I know they don't. But that that's kind of where I am. But I do, if someone like Skehill, I know your opinion is different on it. It should just be, you know, the four steps, not to put words in your mouth, the four steps.
I suppose when I saw this incident, there was something last year that got me thinking. I just thought of rugby, Murph. If there's an incident in rugby pitch where the referee goes advantage, and if I was on the team with the advantage and I knock the ball on and pick it up and the ref says stay going, that wouldn't happen. It would stop. You know what I mean? Mm. Different sport. I get that, right? But I just think the incident or that type of incident is the same. It has the same ethos, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, if O'Donnell is getting fouled, fair enough, he's getting fouled, but he's also committing a foul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for me, I would stop the game. You have a very valid point, though, about the level of cynicism, but I do think that how is the ref supposed to, you know, detail that? How is he supposed to envisage what is going to be the finished article here? Is he definitely going to get a goal? It's very hard unless you're inside the small parallelogram, right? If you're outside, it's a different story. I think if you're into the 21 or into the 14, even, sorry, that's what the black card rule is for. You know what I mean? In this instance, I'm not so sure. Do you know what I mean? I'm not so sure. Outside the 21, I'd be saying, blow it up and take the point.
Yeah, fair enough. And I wouldn't say if anyone makes that argument, I wouldn't go, no, you're wrong on that. It's just kind of one, it's definitely a one with a question mark over it that, I mean, at all times we're trying to think of how do we keep the play moving and how do we benefit the person that's in possession of the ball, you know, positively affecting them in that. Let's say if I'm a defender and I'm out of my legs, it's 65 minutes and I know a top quality forward's coming in and I'm pretty much gassed out. You know, anybody can read that situation there that I'm about to create a foul on somebody. It probably shouldn't be in my favor there that the rule, you know, if I just hold on to him, it's four steps and then, okay, just give him the free. That's probably my benefit there. But like, again, this is a conversation for probably down the line. In the moment, the easiest thing to probably do for any referee to stop any of this is just, yeah, it's rarely going to happen in a game. It's only going to happen once or twice. You know, just blow it up. Don't go onto the discretion of giving 10 or 12 steps. Just say, right, look, free, tap it over the bar. And I think that gets rid of the argument then.
All right. Joseph Nash's comment here, because you see, Murphy, you should be defending the defenders there. How are backs expected to defend if forwards are taking that many steps?
Well, like what I would say in this situation is that it wasn't the case that Shane O'Donnell went to go around Matty O'Hanlon. Matty O'Hanlon was tackling fairly and Shane O'Donnell took 10, 11 steps. Shane O'Donnell took 3 steps, went to go around Matty O'Hanlon, was around him and then starts to be fouled from behind. It wasn't Shane O'Donnell abusing the steps initially. And I think to be fair, Shane O'Donnell was just playing what was in front of him. If the referee blew it up and said free, I don't think Shane O'Donnell would have given out, said it was true on goal. He would have just went, well, I was just playing what was in front of me. If Shane O'Donnell threw the ball up there to solo run, Matty O'Hanlon would have knocked it out of his hand. So he couldn't really throw it up either. So I would say in the situation that, okay, yeah, absolutely. How's a defender meant to defend if a player is allowed to be given 10 steps? But it wasn't a case that this was a 50-50. Two players were running in competition for each other for the ball. It was a case of Shane O'Donnell had sold a sidestep to Matty O'Hanlon, gone around him, and was now being fouled from behind. So that's the situation that the referee is looking at. And it's a tough situation to be in. Like we said, it's probably just easiest to go blow it up. Until the rules change, blow it up on the 4 or 5 steps and just give the free in. But maybe it's something that if it does start to creep into the game, it can definitely become a conversation where an amendment to the advantage rule whereby a referee can use his discretion where he quite clearly sees that it would be maybe a minor disadvantage to stop the player from running at this stage. And maybe the situation will resolve itself by just letting it play. But until we have that rule, we just have to play it, I suppose, to the rule of the 4 steps.
I take Fiol's point here as well. Advantage does not mean the rules are temporarily suspended. So, at the moment, it's certainly not written in that way, whereby just because you're getting tugged at, you can just keep going.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Carsten, fault for you on this, Sunscale. If you're the referee, what would you have done in that circumstance? Would you pull them for steps?
I would have, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we can be guilty of trying to. I know the attacking team should be rewarded for trying to attack and hit for goal, and maybe the person doing the foul or the defence should be, you know, punished. But the punishment can't be in the middle of a rule being broken. Also,
yeah,
you know what
true,
I mean.
Yeah.
And I suppose I do think back at where we came from. You go back a couple of years ago where we had no advantage, and where lads were literally through on goal, and the game was always brought back. That was a disaster for both teams. Good if you're defending. Do you know what I mean? Bad if you're attacking. But yeah. I suppose where things are at now, let's say. I think if we correct the second foul, Jimmy O'Donnell's foul, we'll have a very good rule still all the same.
Yeah. Can we talk about O'Donnell more generally? Because I see Richard's got up here. O'Donnell is some hand. It was mentioned a couple of times in the commentary as well. He finished up with 1-4 yesterday. Someone else had put a tweet into us earlier on, which was just like, no question, just talk about how good O'Donnell was. So you were there watching him in the flesh, Murph. I mean... First of all, he's got such great touch and such great control. I would hate to be defending against him. And at times he came out into very clever spaces to take the ball yesterday. Not the biggest man, but he's got a really good leap. He's got an incredible hand to catch the ball. And he just has this kind of thing where no matter how tightly a bunch around him, he seems to be able to just push out into space. I would say he's an incredible customer to try and deal with.
Yeah, he's a great, it's not even a sidestep. It's more like...
balance, swivel.
Yeah, it's the balance, it's the agility of where like he gets a ball into the hand and like where some people call it a sidestep, but it's really more they're starting to run a different direction. He actually kind of nearly jumps from side to side in, like say, one big leap sideways where he loses a defender. But he also turns, something that defenders don't like is player who wins a ball like that creates a small bit of space, but then turns and looks at you because they're about to take you on. Like that's something that O'Donnell does that's just exceptional. He did one bit of play yesterday that probably didn't even make a highlight reel where ball bounced out in front of him. Wexford player was coming and he just rose the ball over the Wexford player and went around the far side, met it. And as soon as he got it, he was out near the sideline, I suppose, on the side that we were on. He was near the sideline at the 65 and then did that thing where he turned and had a look and head up. Like, I mean, so often you talk to younger players and you tell them about using your head, like or getting your head up and looking up and scanning what's there. And he sprayed a ball about, 60 yards across. I think it could have been David Reedy or someone was there. But he was straight away, once he got the ball in his hand, he wasn't looking to finish it off with a big score. It was a case of how can I use the ball well? But the big one for me is just his ability to win the ball. Like so many times, like people will talk about players and say, oh, I play this player because, he's great skill or he can do this or, he's great striking and bat or whatever. But the first things you should look at any player is how good is he at actually managing to get on a ball? And let's say ball he's expected to get on that's fed to him really well, but also ball that is 50-50, ball that's tough ball to win. Shane O'Donnell is brilliant to win in all of them. Like brilliant to win in all of them. And I will say as well, I'm not saying Brian Lowen listens to ourselves or Leo O'Connor, but Leo said it during the week that he'd like to see him out at centre forward a bit more. And straight away, he was brought out centre forward, I'd say maybe after 10-15 minutes. And even the dynamic changed again. It felt like the attention had shifted as to where the attention was on the field. And I think maybe, like you might have seen maybe Peter Duggan or someone was in around there. And I was going, I said, that's a great dynamic. And Cahill even said it, like Cahill mentioned that obviously Leo had said it during the week. But he was saying, look, Shane O'Donnell's out centre forward now. And again, you have him close to goal because he's capable of scoring incredible goals. But when you bring that out around centre forward, he gets on a huge amount of ball, just wins the ball. And that's the primary thing, wins the primary possession and then is able to set up so much. And like I came away, what did he come away with? 1-4? Was it 1-4 or 1-5 the other day? Like from play, like that's great. Whether you're full forward or centre forward, any day you come away 1-4 from play, that's top class in fairness. So look, he's just a great talent. And the other thing as well, he's tough as nails. He gets some belts during games and he just gets up and carries on.
Yeah, I don't know if he's getting better at this point, Skell. He's obviously adding a few different extra bows to his game. And like at this stage, I've stuck it in the title, O'Donnell for Hurler of the Year. He has to be in contention. Like he's an all-star basically sealed before he even goes to Croke Park for the semi-final.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Is he getting better? Well, I used to remember him, obviously he burst on the scene in 2013 with that Ireland final performance against Cork. And then he has just seemed to have grown. But he's kept up that level. Sometimes when players burst onto scenes, their level kind of subside a bit. It drops down to a more, I suppose, neutral level, but he's just kept it at a very, very high level. His playing ability is exceptional. And one thing I Murphy ran about ball retention there and the way he gets the ball, like he's not, if you see him in person, lads, he's not a big man. He's not small either, but he's not a big man. So the way his ability to win the ball, specifically in the air, and how he's able to hold off big men, challenging him physically, it's a sight to behold. And I can never understand how he gracefully gets away from contact the whole time. I don't know, is it a technique, the way he holds the hurl up and the hands up, whatever it is, but his balance is unreal. His feet are class. His swivel when he lands with a ball is immediate. Like he drops, as he's dropping from the height from jumping, he's literally turning as he drops. So he's gone immediately. So he must be an incredibly hard person to mark. But he's at a level now that is probably, it's probably his best. His best. Like the goal he scored there yesterday was exceptional. But I remember one he put past me in 2018, the same goal, like it was in class the way he did it as well. And it's not like yesterday. This is over the course of his career. He's been Mr. Consistent. But the thing is, I suppose he doesn't, I don't mean this in a bad way, but he's probably been in the shadow a bit, of Tony Kelly. And maybe some people may say, maybe rightfully so. But he's been exceptional for Clare. He doesn't really let them down. You remember the couple of semi-finals, lads, when, particularly 2022, when Clare had a very, very off day. Yeah, if you think back, O'Donnell performed excellently that day.
Yeah.
Last year, same thing again. This year, here he is again. You know what I mean? So we didn't, when we were asked there during the week as about the hurdle of the year, I think we both said three, we all said three limit classes, didn't we, Murph? I think we did. We said Hayes, Hegarty, yeah, and Quaid, right? Mm. But now I think fair is fair. He has to come into the,
yeah,
you know what I mean? He has to come into the conversation for hurdle of the year. And if he backs it up with a great semi final, he's right there. But as to answer your question, Will, it's all start, absolutely sealed, done. Now, where to put him? It's a great case. I'm not sure because, you know, like Hegarty's in great all star. Yeah, there's loads of lads in the wing forward position or full forward position there.
Let the All-Star committee worry about that. Look at Colin McCarthy getting in here. Can't get the ear because he'll be watching the final on the couch.
Harsh enough, Colin.
Limerick boys firing shots at the Clare lads.
Boys throwing shots. Shots been thrown about the Munster final here as well. There was a few people who were asking, Murph, whether Clare changed the whole lot up from the Limerick game. We might talk a little bit about Shanahar because I actually thought, again, ball retention-wise, he gave them a very interesting option. He came in to start instead of McCarthy and... I thought he gave him a little bit of something in the forward line as well. There we go. Stockroom Tim. Shanahar was good, won loads of ball and set other lads up for handy scores. He was definitely there as a focal point in the ball winner, wasn't he?
Just a quick question.
I hear he played for his club last week.
He did. Yeah, Dalo was saying, I think he said he played 45 minutes.
Came on and got 1-5. Mm. Unbeknownst to the Clare management team. And
maybe they want him to get a run out though. Surely, he hasn't had much time in his legs.
Well, from what I've been told from a very reliable source, like that, he was approached about a training during the week, and was
and said, he still started.
What,
so,
what are you doing playing the game? And he stood his ground, so it worked.
Fair play. Better to what's that phrase? Better to
ask for forgiveness
than permission. Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, Murph. Go ahead.
Sorry, Murph.
I remember the question, Dory. Yeah, he did. He brought himself and Aidan McCarthy are just, you know, different players, and that's probably the only way to put it. But like both have their own strengths, and what Shanahar kind of brings, like Shanahar is a big man, and he makes great runs as well. And I think from the point of view of like Ian Galvin is another fellow who makes great runs as well, in terms of he starts deep, breaks out left and right, and is usually there for a ball that's popped into the corner. Shanahar is, you know, quite similar to the likes of a Peter Duggan, like very physical, can get involved, can pop up and get a few scores, and probably, you know, just provides a bit of physicality again to that forward line, while obviously providing all the skill and class he has. So, like when he came off, there was a big round of applause, like a big cheer for himself and John Conlon when they came off. You know, it was noticeable from the Clare crowd that they were appreciating their efforts. And Shanahar definitely, like, some people were saying to me that, no, Aidan McCarthy will start the semi-final. Like, you don't know. Like, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors there. We also don't know the way Brian Lowen is going to be looking at this in terms of the players he has and what they provide in terms of the problems that they can, you know, cause for Kilkenny. And I think that's what they're looking at. And Shanahar definitely is one of those players that if they identify somewhere that they can slot him in and he can use his physicality and then, you know, go for goal, go for points, well, Shanahar could start, but I wouldn't. It's a very hard one to call at the moment. Aidan McCarthy may be back in there for the semi-final. But look, Brian Lowen will be happy to have another string to his bow.
Hmm. Look, Skell, you had question marks about Clare before this. I don't know. There's a few of you making the point there. 14-man Wexford. Wexford to read it and fire during the game. Taking all that into account, were you impressed overall with how Clare played? And are Clare going to be a serious danger to Kilkenny in the semi-final?
First question was, I impressed? Like, look, I don't think impressed is the word because I think they did the job. They came to win. They won the game. I've seen it from Clare before. I say where they get into a game whereby they're in control and, you know, against a team that's perceived to be lesser than them. Perceived is the key word there, and they just roll over them, steamroll them, right? So they got the job done. Are Kilkenny worried? I don't think. Truthfully speaking, I don't really think Kilkenny worried about anyone. That's the truth. That's just me thinking honestly. I think they have a couple of wrongs right now. So the last couple of years, they went to Crow Park. They've come away, that's obviously disappointed. Very poor performance 2022. Backed it up somewhat 2023, only for an Owen Murphy wonder save. They could have been the final against Limerick last year. So now I think they're going to have to perform. And they're under a bit of pressure, to be honest, because this is, you know, this is a team in its fifth year. Like it's like 5 years, that's a long time in the lifespan of a team. You know, trying to get there. You know what I mean? So I think this is where it has to happen. And Kilkenny, though, like it's very hard to, how would I put this now, Will, without sounding offensive? Jesus. Kilkenny, just, no.
Offensive to who? But go on.
To Kilkenny. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd say if you ask a lot of people nationally, like, so, who would win, like last year, the year before, they'd say, first Clare or Kilkenny. A lot of people would say Clare. I myself say Clare, right? Remember, we came back after the semi-final and we said there's something about Kikini. Whatever it is, I don't know what it is down there, Murph. And it's like, even Podge made notes from the roadshow about when he asked a couple of Kikini people, there's like, oh, there's no concern over Clare whatsoever. There's no concern. I don't know. Is that just downright, you know, undeniable belief? Is it biased towards your own? I'm not sure what it is, right? But I'm starting to believe a bit of it too myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, Kikini be fine. And Richie made a comment in, you know, we off the ball there a couple of weeks back about how Kikini only get going at the right time. Do you get me? The round robin, fair enough, they come through the business, but then they start rolling in Leinster final time, semi-finals, like this. So I'm not going to doubt Kikini at all. I don't think they worry about anyone, to be fair.
Joseph's got a good one on that for a follow-up. Murphy, when Podge said Clare have a chance versus Kilkenny, you said nope, Kilkenny winning. Now, I should point out that was 2023, wasn't it? So it was Tommy Welsh he bumped into the first year, you, and now we're going on to year three. So are you worried after yesterday about Clare Kilkenny this time?
No, there wasn't a lot learned. Like, I don't think your opinion should change on Clare after yesterday. The only thing we were looking to see about Clare was, have they any hangover from the Munster final? And yesterday the answer to the question said, no, they don't have a hangover. But it's still the same Clare team that we were looking at in the Munster final and in the round robin. They're still a dangerous team. And I agree completely with Skehill. That game last year could have went either way. It could have. And we completely understand that. And Kilkenny came out on the right side of it. This game the next day could as well go either way. There's no doubt, and there's no point in saying otherwise. But I'm not worried going, God, how are we going to beat these Clare lads or anything? I recognise that they're a top quality team and they're outstanding. But I also, I think when you look at this, if you were to go, okay, well, Shane O'Donnell, say, outstanding hurler, I say, well, okay, Owen Cody's on the far end. You could say, oh, well, we have Tony Kelly. I say, well, Adrian Mullen or TJ. Like, you know, as in, there's a lot of matchups here that go really well. And what I have liked about Kilkenny so far is that they've been kind of, I don't know, would you say cutting their cloth to measure in terms of they've been moving lads around. They've brought in John Donnelly now at centre forward, who's kind of an anchor, and he's kind of a workhorse, and he's getting through a lot of work there. They've also, from what I could see against Dublin, were trying a few things that was in preparation for either, you know, maybe a Clare or maybe a Limerick, where they were going, right, we recognise we should have enough for Dublin here if we go out and perform, but we also realise that we're going to have to bring something to a Clare, to a Cork, to a Limerick, whoever, that, you know, we have to keep progressing this game on. So what I've seen from Kilkenny as a Kilkenny supporter makes me happy to say that, yeah, they have everything at their disposal to go and win it. Doesn't give them a right, but I believe that they are going to go and win it. And until the whistle's blown at the final, you know, the final whistle in that game, and if Clare come out to the other side of it, it'll go, okay, fair enough, we'll dissect why it happened or how it happened. But until that moment comes, I'm looking going, I'm really happy where Kilkenny are and that they can go and beat this Clare team.
Okay. Tony Kelly, on this one, Scale, 6 points yesterday, 5 in play. This one coming in from Keane Corey, who's clearly a Clare fan based on his Twitter avatar there. Kelly was on song yesterday. This is probably the game he needed, isn't it? Where he was free-flowing, free-shooting, some wonderful scores.
It was loose, though, wouldn't it?
The game was loose, which probably helped him.
In fairness, so in this type of game where the kind of structure went kind of out the window a bit because it's sending off, you know, the game became loose. There was an allowance there to get free and to basically occupy positions over anywhere he wanted on the pitch. So he had a very kind of freedom-ish role where he could just go where he wanted and pop up. And in fairness, like, that's probably the type of game that's good for the confidence. I don't know what I read too much into it, but it's good for him to get a full 70, very close to it, under his belt. And I'd say it was needed because it was kind of it's been a stop-start championship for the man, you know, since he came back in that round-robin game against Limerick. And it's just been, I suppose, how would he say it? Not the best preparation for him, you know what I mean, in comparison to previous years. Like, so now he seems to be up and running, which is exactly what Clare need. And I think they need everyone else. They need everyone back. They need Taylor to get back. You know what I mean? They need all lads fit and firing, because what's coming down the line is going to be a heavy, heavy battle. I'm fully on your side too. If you go down, it's when we talk about Limerick, we always go through all the matchups and the personnel they have, and it comes down just to again, key personnel. And Kilkenny have plenty. They have plenty in every line. I saw a question there about Mikey Butler and Tony Kelly.
Oh, like, man, every single question here. Butler on SOD or TK. Will Tony Kelly be followed out to midfield by Butler if that happens? Will Butler Mark O'Donnell? So, who is Mikey Butler here going on then?
But in fairness, I don't think you can disagree. There's history here. So Mikey Butler's done a fantastic job in Tony Kelly in the past.
Yeah, Mikey Butler, surely you keep Tony Kelly as far away from Butler as possible.
But what happened the last time? Mikey Butler scored.
He followed him. But he followed him last time.
So I don't think Mikey Butler is a very, very comfortable cornerback on the ball. Very, very comfortable. So if you're Owen Murphy behind him, you're giving him sharp workouts, you have great confidence that he'll do something with it. He won't just drive it down the field, you know what I mean? So he's comfortable in the fullback line. We've seen him pop up in the in half four times. We've seen him score a goal, you know, in Leinster final against Galway, etc. So he's comfortable in all facets of the pitch. So whether he's marking, like for me, I'd put him on Tony Kelly because Michael Butler can also thrive up there and get Tony going backwards, which is what happened last year, remember? Tony had to go back towards his own goal because Michael Butler was going forward. So it's not as if Michael Butler is lost out there. So Shane Donnelly will have to be tasked with somebody else, but definitely Michael Butler. There's history there, and he's got his number. In fairness, I don't think anyone, even the Clare people, you have to agree with me. Butler has done excellently on TK.
Okay, Murph, does that mean your boy goes to follow him again?
Well, I'd say so, yeah. I mean, there's potential here that Tony Kelly could go out towards midfield, but I think that's nearly bending the knee to Kilkenny if they do that. They obviously want him in the half-forward line, wing forward, potentially, and let him roam. But that's worked out for Mikey in the past. Doesn't mean it's going to work out exactly the same this time, but I don't see any reason why you wouldn't just go with it again, you know? And if he does roam, like we've seen Mikey, he followed Cathal Mannion there a few years ago. I think it was Cathal Mannion. He found himself up on the far D in the Galway half. Like, yeah. He's obviously, when Derek says it to him, he goes, yeah, go wherever you want. And when you tell that to a defender, well, that's great. All he has to do is cover ground then, follow him and cover ground. So, but the Shane O'Donnell thing is different, you know? So Shane O'Donnell may start full forward, or he may go out centre forward or wing forward, let's say, wherever he ends up. But the two of them are two different sides of players, where Tony Kelly will roam around and drift onto ball. Shane O'Donnell nearly provides himself as a target a lot of times, where he'll come breaking out, give the ball to me, you know, go up and compete, whatever it may be. I would say that Kilkenny will go, if he starts full forward, obviously Hugh Lawler's on there, and if he drifts out, they will say, listen, lads, if he drifts out, you know, one of you is to pick him up and make sure you're absolutely stuck to him. And you know, a man-marking job may fall out of it there, but I don't think Kilkenny will nail their colours to the mast to go, everybody's going man-marking and we'll just get ourselves pulled and dragged around the place. I think they might go, yeah, Tony Kelly, and if Shane O'Donnell comes out, make sure he's marked up. And I think that'll be it. But I don't think they'll change it around too much to facilitate Clare that way.
Okay. Good question, Major McGrath. You can take it first, Gail. What are your thoughts been on Conor Lean?
I think he's been very effective, to be honest. You know, obviously Rory Hayes was in that position for the last number of years, and you know, the year before last, Rory Hayes was nearly one of the first players on the Clare team sheet in the form he was in. But Conor Lean has come in. He's played well, like, in fairness to him. He doesn't seem to be losing. I judge cornerbacks or lads on obviously their defensive capabilities, obviously, but the comfort on the ball going forward. Today's game, is like an awful lot of it is about how you play with the ball, regardless of what position you occupy in the pitch. And like Butler, Hugh Lawler, these lads with Kinney, you know, Nash, Morrissey, we see them all the time, real comfort on the ball. Watching Conor Lean yesterday, seems very comfortable. No problems. He's no issue going forward on the pitch. Obviously got a great score. He just seemed, and there's a bit about him. There was a couple of challenges that I looked at yesterday and said they were maybe a bit questionable. I have no hand for that whatsoever. So he seems to, he hasn't deputised for anyone. He's made that role his own. In fairness to the kid, so he's doing well and like he's there to stay. So yeah, he's a good match for him.
Mm-hmm. Murph, your thoughts on Lean so far?
Yeah, I think he's been very strong. Popped up early on and got a point there yesterday as well. So he kind of provides that overlap there for, I know mostly he's going to be on maybe McInerney's side, but, you know, players will find themselves in alternating corners at different times. But he has, you know, he's great pace on him there and he can get up the line as well. And, you know, I couldn't see any faults with his defending over the weekend either. So, yeah, no, geez, I can't fault the man. He's going well there. And as Skettle said, he's made a position his own. Like, you know, it's not a case that he's deputised. No, he's made the jersey his own at the moment.
Yeah, no, he's got good stick work about him as well. The other game then, we can go back to other questions around Clare or Kilkenny or even Wexford. Actually, do you know what? Before we go to the other game, what's your assessment of Wexford, Skettle, before we move off this? Because do you just kind of write it off yesterday as how things were going before Rory O'Connor was off and how things are afterwards? I see a few people suggesting that Chin wasn't 100% fit and that was partly why they wanted to put him in closer to goal rather than that being a tactic of him being there to break ball against that full back line. What do you make of Wexford overall against Clare then? Or do we just write it off as what happened after the red card was almost inevitable?
Well, I think you have to probably, if you're analysing Wexford, you have to analyse the whole year, in fairness to them. You know, so they had the Paddy, they're a respectable league, you have to say. Excuse me. And they exited out of Leinster. So, you know, under a new management team. So it's not as if the year has been, you know, has been a drastic disimprovement from last year. It's been an improvement. And in fairness, they've come up against a Clare team who many, and rightfully so, will classify as the second or third best team in the country. So if you're probably throwing shade at Wexford for not you know, performing and beating Kerry yesterday, I don't think it's very fair, to be honest, because especially the opposition they're going up against. And it was made all the harder by the 14-man situation. We don't know. We're not privy to that exact information about injuries. I have no idea. To use the Jackie Terrell phrase, if you're on the pitch, it means you're good to play. So was there a current injury or not? I don't know. But ultimately, they competed, I'd say, pretty well in the first half when numbers were, you know, were level. But I always got the sense of the game. And you know, it's hard to explain this, but you get the sense that Clare just have enough for Wexford. Wexford don't quite have enough for Clare. And when the man got sent off in, that just, you know, that was multiplied tenfold. So I think their year as a whole has been, you know, minus the Antrim game, obviously. But after that point, the year as a whole has been pretty good. Good performance against Galway. Very good performance against Kilkenny in Orland Park. You know, came out, and ultimately, I suppose, were contending against Clare until they sent it off. So I'd say if you were to give them marks, would you give them a solid 7 out of 10 in fairness for where they came from last year? To be fair, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't give them much higher than that. I wouldn't give them much lower. I just think it's quite unfair to give them much lower.
The ball and the way they were distributing it in, Murph, if you want to take that point before we move off Wexford, there seemed to be a tendency that it was high, long, direct was the way they wanted to go, as opposed to working it through. And that's why, in a way, Rory O'Connor had to do this kind of Superman role where he was carrying the ball, taking shots from difficult enough angles when he was on the pitch before he was sent off. But there was this tendency to try and lump it into McDonald. Now, I don't know whether that was because they felt the Clare were fragile in the air. Maybe that was the thinking. But it didn't always work out. Like, you're putting in ball that's making it very difficult for both Shin and Conor McDonald to try and win it. And sometimes the ball was going over the end line, or it was just allowing Clare to come back out with the ball.
Yeah, I don't think it really worked at any stage, to be honest. Like, they were lumping balls in from fairly early on. And like, when the first balls that went in, Conor Cleary, right hand up, caught it. Like, changed hands with the hurl, went up, caught it, and sent it flying back. And like, after that, they had 5 points on the board. Rory O'Connor was the only forward that scored from play at that stage. Lee Chinnan knocked over a few frees, but the supporting cast just weren't there. Conor Hernan got a point. But in general, they had about 5 points after 20, 25 minutes. And you're just looking at going, you can say anything about, you know, the effort here or whatever, but lumping long ball in as a result then on top of Conor McDonald was never going to resolve the situation. While Clare were getting a good spread of scores, working the ball really well, but then you were just looking at Wexford going, this looks like hit and hope here at the moment, as opposed to let's do stuff, let's carry the ball up the field. And like, for quite a big part, the Clare defenders were actually, when that high ball was coming in, they were just shepherding the Wexford lads and letting the ball even go out over the end line at times, which is a complete energy sapper when you see something like that happen. So, like, you know, Wexford can look at this and go, to be honest, we were never really at the races here. After about 20 minutes, we only had about 5 points on the board. And I would look, if I was a Wexford player, and just say, look, to be honest, outside of Rory O'Connor, were the rest of us really picking it up early days there to give ourselves a fighting chance?
Yeah. Okie dokie. Cork then. Win in the end, 26 points to 21. It was one of those. So when Horgan hits over his 10th point and he gets to 6-9-9, there was about 5 minutes left in the game. Cork didn't score again, and they kind of left the door a little bit open for Dublin. I would question some of Dublin's decisions not to go for points with some of those frees and just execute them quickly. And then in the end, they made a mess of one of the ones which they tried to go short on as they were trying to go for goals. But anyway, Cork win by 5 points. Pat Ryan, their manager, said afterwards, Skell, it was devoid of energy and all over the place. In fairness to Dublin, they play a very good running game and it's hard to get traction at times. It becomes a bit congested and a bit unorthodox, really, for want of a better word. It made it a bit harder for our fellas to settle into the game and get their hands on the ball, but we still put up a good score and we'll build on it for 2 weeks' time. He said as well, maybe the game was a bit flat for both sides. He was asked about the early start, but he said kind of generally it was a disappointment they didn't go for goals and the energy level shown by his team. Now, Cork have to go up against Limerick, and this is me not trying to wind the boys up by talking about Limerick here, but if Cork are going to beat Limerick, they have to be so much better than they have been the last 2 weeks.
That's true, because you know yourself, like, it was noted during the week that Limerick are probably going to go up a gear. When they get to Croke Park, honestly, the only way I can describe it is a fascinating brand of hurling. They're just absolutely brilliant, you know what I mean? So they're like a different animal from what's within Munster. So Cork are going to have to come, and Pat Ryan can't be saying after the Limerick game they were devoid of energy. They have to come with buckets of energy, intent, you know, aggression, sharpness, goal threats. Everything that you need to beat Limerick has to be all bottled into one, and you have to bring it out on your best day. They've been, I think, by their standard, and I think we can classify their standard now as how they played against Limerick in Parkacree some weeks back. So by their standards, they've been poor over the last couple of weeks, which is fair. They have. They've been poor by their standards. And with the performance they put up yesterday, they're not going to beat Limerick. And what will happen is Limerick will annihilate them. Straight up, they'll annihilate them. They just seem to be very would the word be lackluster, lads? They're just lackluster. It's just very kind of, you know, lukewarm. It's very hard to explain this, you know. And I think maybe it's because, personally, they look at the opposition and go, yeah, we'll have enough for you. Well, that's disrespect to Offaly or Dublin, I don't know. But I think Cork are looking at them going, yeah, we'll be fine. You know, there's bigger tests lie ahead, or bigger battles, and they're just doing enough to get through. Because what happens in the games, you see them, they race up into a certain lead, then they get clawed back, race out again, clawed back, and they just kind of walk over the finish line. So I think the way they're playing at the minute, Will, it's not good enough. But because, as well, another thing, we look at the numbers. I just did a few numbers on that game, right? So 26 points, 21, right? And when you watch the game, you think, Jesus, Cork have had 100 shots here. They only had two more shots more than Dublin. They had the same amount of shots from play. So it's not as if this was a trouncing. Where it ended up was just a freeze between Dalton and Horgan versus Doran Burke, unfortunately. You know what I mean? So the game, in terms of margins, like, it might seem in real time that there was a big margin, but there actually wasn't huge. Dublin had plenty of chances here to capitalise and get a run on Cork, but just didn't. Their efficiency, which we've questioned in the past, in fairness, came back to haunt them again. You know, you said yourself, Will, some of the shot choices, I would agree with you. I thought they were questionable, to be honest. Even the tactics in leaving Curry up by himself for long periods, again, questionable. Some of the shooting in terms of around the middle and the way they're playing around the ball, questionable. You know what I mean? But then the defender fares well. We questions about the defending, particularly Aaron Donald. I questions about him too, personally. And, like, in fairness, he played fair well. You know what I mean? So I don't think all is as rosy as people might think in Cork.
He did play very well. I wouldn't disagree with that whatsoever. But I do wonder, is he like a frustrated forward having to play in the backs? Because when they were overlapping a little bit towards the end, O'Donnell was getting forward every single time.
100%. Like, he's one of these lads that's a bit of an enigma to me. Because I just remember last year, like, when Doughty Burke got his goal. Do you remember the game, let's say, there were 10 points up in Galway, right? And, like, you tack on a point or two, weather the storm, game over. When Doughty Burke got his goal, Aaron Donnelly was changing his boots on the sideline. In the middle of the game, like. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, what kind of thought process is that? And Doughty comes right to the middle. Do you know what I mean? Then in the Wexford game, let's say, and in the Antrim game, he's out the forwards. He couldn't wait to get up the Felix Kilkenny. Remember that? Like, he couldn't wait for the second goal. Do you know what I mean? He's the one that assisted it off. Like, it's madness. But I think he is a frustrated forward, to be honest. And I'd say he's probably asked Dublin management to get out of fullback. But the trouble is, he's so good and effective in there. You have to keep him there. You know, he is, in fairness, when he's on song, like, and when he's tuned in, mentally tuned in, he's certainly one of the best in the business. So, unfortunately, he's just so good in there, he's going to be kept there.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those as well, Murph. I think their defending was much improved, and we should definitely give them credit for that. But Dimro Dooling has a shot, which is well saved by Patrick Collins when they were chasing the goal. They had the Burke free, and Donald was a bit off the freeze, as he normally would be, with the ones he was trying to convert for points in the first half. But there was the one that was blocked off the line. They had their chances, didn't they? Like, I wonder, do they look back on this, and as Skell mentioned, the wides, God, the first half particularly, they shot from everywhere and hit so many wides, those goal chances at the end. Dublin might well, when they analyse this, look back and think that's a chance missed.
Yeah, they can look at it that way if they want, but both sides were actually quite similar here, bar the conversion rate and a few more points going for Cork. Like, both sides were criminal of hitting wides here, but particularly in the first half, Dublin were fairly criminal for hitting wides. I agree with you, their structure in the backs and how they actually worked the ball out in the first half was really good. They were being patient, they were moving the ball up the field. They didn't seem to have a full forward line to actually target and to hit. Now, Sean Curry was playing really well. He seemed to be playing in around the full forward line and coming out and winning ball, and he was popping over scores early on. But outside of that then, I didn't really understand, like, they were playing quite deep. So the idea that you'd be able to get up the field then and start popping over scores, it's very tough to do that when you've committed yourself very deep into your own backs. But yeah, like, I think for both sides here, like, Dublin played to a certain level, which was better than the Leinster final. And Cork, which I would say they kind of quite often do, is lower themselves to the level of the team they play against. So the Cork could have went out here and did what Kilkenny did to Dublin. They have the quality, absolutely no doubt, to do it. But they kind of went out, could see that they were coasting along, were happy enough. And they do this thing where they just leave teams in it. And like with the last 5-10 minutes, I looked at the scoreboard and kind of went, we think this game is over, but there's 6 points in it. And they did have opportunities, exactly as you said, Will. Like, you know, there was lads, who did you say, was it?
O'Dooling shot, which is a really good save from Collins.
Yeah, great save from Collins. That goes in, I think that brought it back to 2 points, because I think there was only 5 points in it at that stage. And then suddenly, it's a scrappy goal, which Cork I mean, they should know that having a game going down the home straight with a point or two in it is a dangerous place to be at any stage in a hurling match. So, like, for me, that's the thing that I would come away from this. And, you know, fair play to Pat Ryan for coming out and saying not be happy with it, because there just seems to be something there with Cork lads that they have savage quality, great players. They have a savage bench as well. They have great lads coming off the bench. But they just seem to go ahead by 6 points, 7 points, 8 points, and then go, let's take our foot off the gas a small bit. The other team gets a point or two, comes back into it. Suddenly it's a two-score game. Then they kind of maybe tack on a point or two, and it feels like they're flying it, but they're just not killing the other team. And it's a weakness. It is a weakness, it has to be said, because there wasn't going to be a huge amount learned for Cork out of this Dublin game if they went out and they hammered them, but at least they would have went, well, we have that killer instinct in us there that if we get opportunities, we take them. At the moment, it's kind of a bit of a, I still don't know with Cork what they're going to do, despite all their quality. But with Dublin, look, yeah, it was a marked performance. And as I said to Carl yesterday, like, if you told Dublin that this is where you'd be at the end of the championship, they probably would have taken your arm off in that, okay, fall flat in the last match, get to a Leinster final, you won't perform. But considering we were talking about Dublin at the start of the year slipping away potentially and, you know, maybe just disappearing, or, you know, it was a good kick to get them this far. But I think they still look at it and go, well, we came this far, but what did we really do? Like, we came and we had a chance at the Leinster final, we didn't do anything. We came to Cork then and we were out of the game really for 50, 60 minutes. And then just the last few minutes, we suddenly start, you know, because we know we're about to be out of the championship, we pile on the pressure. Like, why not try and start the game like that, where you start 100 miles an hour and see what happens? Okay, you mightn't sustain it, but give yourself a chance, you know. So with both teams, there's kind of a, there's a funny feeling coming away from it that, yeah, Cork won and they were the better team, absolutely. But there's just a, you kind of walk away from it going, what did we really learn after that game? Not a whole lot, to be honest.
Yeah, look, I think I would take Shez Magic 815's point here as well. If Dublin were more ambitious in going for goals earlier, they could have conceded three at the other end. Dublin were happy enough to keep the score down. Look, there was definitely a certain amount of Dublin wanted to be more solid scale. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, by the way, that they would have left themselves too open if they'd gone for it. Cork had bizarrely kind of drifted out of the game like 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, but that was kind of forced upon them too, in fairness. Like we were very harsh in Dublin after the Leinster final, and rightfully so. I think they're probably harsh on themselves. The concession was huge, you know what I mean, against Kilkenny. So I think what they wanted to do was probably do two things. One was get their structure correct. So they got their structure all wrong against Kilkenny. And in fairness to them, you know, I know you look at the score, you say 26 points, quite a lot. But in the manner in which they conceded, it wasn't like, you know, the Kilkenny manner. So I think there was a far better performance. And that started from Sean Brennan out the way. I thought his striking was excellent. You know, his fielding, even the save at the end was top drawer. So they seem to be in a good frame of mind. And yes, they wanted to keep things tight at the back. And yes, that might be isolated, you know, the likes of the Currys up the top. But structure-wise, I thought they were fine. Keeping the score down, I think, is a small bit. The way it's termed, maybe, it could be disrespectful. But maybe the sentiment, I get what you're trying to say. Trying to keep things tight at the back.
They want to be trying solid, as opposed to.
Trying to be solid, yeah. Trying to keep the back a small pitch and make a big pitch up the top. I get that, right? But I just, I saw a comment there. I don't know who wrote it about Dublin. Did they really believe that they were going to go and do it? And I would have that question myself. You know, because there was opportunity. And again, I go back to numbers. Sometimes I can always say numbers distort, you know, the thought, the thinking of a game. But in fairness, they had opportunity. They had plenty of shots. And just the execution wasn't there. It just left them. And, I feel sorry for Dorland Burke to say after, you know, the quarterfinal last year against Clare, having to come off, fighting his way, getting into good form. And next thing, just miss a couple of vital frees. It just shows the importance of having a top-level free-taker doing the business for you day in, day out. And you might think that's a bit harsh. And maybe it is, but ultimately, if those frees pop over, and not huge difficulty, this is coming from a non-free taker, all right?
Some of them were gimmies by his standard.
So, for someone like him, I would class that as not huge difficulty. They need to be executed. And again, Murphy, you said it right yourself, Collins has said if the landscape could have been way different. And for someone like Dublin, for a team like Dublin, when they get within touching distance and they get a bit of belief, they only seem to get the belief when, you know, either they're in front or they're right there, draw a point behind or close to a draw. If there are 5 or 6 points behind, you never get that feeling with Dublin. Do you mean the energy seems to just go with them a small bit? That's just me looking in now. So if that goal goes in or a couple of frees go over, who knows what the game will be like? And then there'll be a real battle. But again, no more than Wexford, I think it's fair to say Dublin, Leinster final appearance, albeit the way the loss was poor, still they have to look at their ear and go, this is positive enough. I think it's fair enough from what we were touting. Again, we were saying that they were going to probably struggle to get out of Leinster, in fairness. You know, and that was going to be a real struggle. We had assumed Galway, Kilkenny, and we're kind of chipping our hats to Wexford. And so for them to exit, get into the Leinster final, you know, and get to here, it's not bad in fairness, lads. So, but now the question will remain, and I know I'm throwing this out of the rabbit out of the hat, but will the management team stay on?
Yeah. Are you one trick pony at the same time, just kind of meshing in there when Micheál Donoghue stayed with
the season? No, I'm not that savvy now with the technology in fairness.
Well, you can put it over to Murph. Do you think Micheál's going to still be there next year, Murph?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
What you ask me that for?
Wasn't expecting it, and to be honest, haven't put a lot of thought into it. Will he be there next year? He might give it one more year, yeah. Like, I'll be honest, I'm just going to be very blunt with this. I won't be surprised if either happened. If they said, oh no, Micheál Donoghue has moved on, it won't shock me. And if he stays on for another year, I'll go, okay, that's fine as well. It's one of those ones where he definitely has improved on where they were last year. And I think Dublin would do well to keep on to Micheál Donoghue, definitely from a Dublin point of view. Does Micheál want to stay on, or does he see that maybe he's reached the limit of what he can do with this team? That's the other question. So I really don't know, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think, Skell? You want him back in Galway anyway.
I'd say, personally speaking, I'd say he does move on.
Back
to Galway, because it remains to be seen, but I think in fairness, I agree with Murph as well. He's doing what he can do. You know what I mean? What they've had to put up with, say, the amount of players that they've lost in year one, I think the numbers are something like there was a 16-player turnaround from when he inherited the team during year one because people were absentees or whatever reasons. That number got down to 11 this year with people coming back, crumbing in the legs. So for him to be able to compete and contest finals, I think is a major positive. I'd say there's also a want in Dublin hurling community to keep him. I'd imagine if he's available to stay on, they'd like to keep him and his management team, because there doesn't seem to be any natural successor just yet in there that can carry that level of management. So I also think there as well, the landscape in Galway, what happens here would maybe have an impact as well on his decision. Maybe.
Okay.
But it's not just Micheál either way. Like, so you have to understand he's bringing five or six more people with him from Galway who are doing, you know, whether it be coaching roles, logistical roles, all that stuff. So he probably has to think about them too. Like, are they all in? Do you know what I mean? It's not as simple as to say, it's just me. There's the whole team. You know what I mean? So I'd say, personally speaking, I'd give it a 25% chance he's in Dublin next year.
Okay. He's in Galway, so. Joseph wondering here about will Crow Park be full or nearly full for Limerick against Cork? I think it's going to be a massive attendance. So 2018, one of the best games in modern times. 71,000, I think, was the attendance for that one. I don't see a reason why it couldn't be similar. The talk was, sure, the trains were booked out from Cork before they even played Offaly a few weeks ago, was the story going around. That's a 4 o'clock game on the Sunday, by the way. It's 3 o'clock for Clare and Kilkenny on the Saturday. One Trick Pony also putting out Dalton versus Hayes. Two fire emojis. Yeah, two boys in form. Dalton banging him over at the weekend. He's such a good fielder as well. Up against Hayes, two big boys. That is going to be an interesting battle, assuming that they both play in their conventional roles and don't get moved around. One Trick Pony wondering as well, you can take this on Murph, Joyce at six. He was named to start midfield, end up playing at six. Is six more comfortable for him than eight?
I think he can play both, to be honest. Once I saw Rob Downey had dropped out and Luke Mead was in, straight away I thought, well, Kieran Joyce is going to go back to six here. But like, he has great ability going forward. Like, he does pop up with scores in the sixth position, and playing him that little bit further up, he's not a million miles from that centre-back place, but he has a lot of hurling in him as well, and it could give him, I suppose, the scope to get up and get a score or two, and kind of ably, there's a nice little balance there between himself and Fitzgibbon. Like, Fitzgibbon does like to drive forward, so Joyce is maybe the option there to hold the fort a bit more when Fitzgibbon is going forward. But I think if Rob Downey is fit, I don't see why Rob Downey doesn't stand at centre-back and maybe allow Joyce up there. And look, it's only a small little change around if it is to happen. But I would say, look, he's obviously doing something right in training where he's in at number eight. Leave him in there and leave Rob Downey hold the fourth there and maybe allow him to push up the field that small bit more.
Sure, you're right, though, Murph. I think that's the reason it's happened. I think that's why Downey has moved in to six. And again, there was another person in six for that way. So Joyce is nearly like a six and a half. And his person can stay there. Let Fitzgibbon. We know Fitzgibbon, how good he is going forward. He's electric. Do we associate him with a major defensive role? No, it's quite the opposite. It's all attacking. So if you have Joyce in midfield who can complement Fitzgibbon to go forward, he's probably Cork's, would it be fair to say he's Cork's equivalent to Will O'Donoghue? Now, Will O'Donoghue is a very high bar. Do you know what I mean? Because there's a bit of biting Joyce too, in fairness, I have to say.
There's
a bit of biting. Yeah. You know what I mean? So like, maybe he's trying to occupy that role whereby he's in on the middle and also getting back to the sixth channel supporting. So I think probably, So I agree with the decision, and I'd keep him at 8, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. Positive feeling definitely about Dublin's year, looking through the comments there. One last one for you, Murph, because people get asked about this, and here you are as the Kilkenny representative, coming in from Liam here. Any thoughts, Murph, on the low numbers travelling to support Kilkenny, easily outnumbered 3-1 at semi-final and final, having been at both?
Yeah, look, I think last year's semi-final there was definitely more Clare fans than there was Kilkenny. I don't know, maybe the success over the years, one or two have maybe select their matches they go to. We have our strong cohort. Like, I know going to games, I know exactly who's going, when they're going, how they're traveling. Like, I mean, there's supporters that we've met on the road for over 20 years now, and you just know that they go to every single game, and that's always been the case. But in terms of numbers, yeah, it's been a while since we've had bigger numbers than maybe another county in Croke Park. Some people might put that down to population or whatever, but look, we have a minor All-Ireland coming up this weekend in Nolan Park. And we also have an All-Ireland semi-final coming up then the following week. Like, for me, I don't see any reason why there shouldn't be anything but a huge attendance from Kilkenny supporters. Semi-final in Croke Park and an All-Ireland, minor All-Ireland final in particular, on your own doorstep, you should be absolutely coming out in huge numbers there. So, yeah, look, we have been outnumbered at times, and I think there should be no reason why we're not at least going 50-50 with the likes of Clare in the semi-final.
Yeah, well, there you go. It leaves it nicely when you see some of these comments coming in. Crack of the Ash, the Cork versus Limerick match is box office after their last match, likely to be close to a sellout. That's it. I mean, it's an easy one to make the promo for. You just put in Patrick Collins scoring that penalty in the group game in the Munster Championship, and you say,
even Patrick Collins scored it, I thought. I didn't think Patrick Collins scored it.
Oh, jeez, he didn't either. Of course.
Did I miss that? Corgan.
No, you didn't.
I saw Skell looking up into the top corner of the room going, Patrick Collins scored it.
Did Horgan throw the ball back to Collins and say, come on up, take the free here for me, I'm not really feeling it. There you go. You show Quaid's save in 2018. You just kind of go, let's have more of this.
Nicky Quaid's save. Easy, so.
I said it was Nicky Quaid, didn't I?
You said Joe Quaid.
No, I said Nicky Quaid. I definitely said Quaid.
We need to look back at that. I thought you said...
Joe Quaid.
No, he said you can show Quaid's save, not Joe Quaid's save.
Right. I'll let you off with that one. That was strike two.
How dare you say anything against Nicky Quaid on this?
Even when you are actually supporting Nicky Quaid in this case. So there you go. Should be a cracker. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Just 1,300 people watching us currently on the live stream. If you could, particularly on the YouTube, give us a like on the way out. Maybe even leave a comment on your way out as well. It helps to spread the pod. I would highly recommend, if you didn't get to see the show in Limerick, especially if you're a Sean Ogue fan, go back and have a gander. It's an hour of fun with Sean O'Gahalpin, a legend of the sport, from last week. That was in Dolans in Limerick. We will be back, Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, 19th of July. I see Skell just kind of tentatively nodding like, I won't be there, fuck this. Unfortunately, Skell won't be there, but we'll have news on the rest of the guests coming up over the next few days as well. We'll have a members pod for you tomorrow morning, early enough, I think, as well.
My wife just texts me.
Go on.
I heard Joe Quaid too.
What?
Aye.
She's downstairs listening.
I'm more than willing to go back.
Grace, you're a lovely lady. I heard Joe Quaid too.
I can't believe Grace is watching this, by the way, especially after things that you said about her recently.
Don't be trying to turn this back on me, son.
Turn what back on you?
I didn't turn it back on me. He said Joe Quaid, right? My wife was backing me up, and he tries to get in between us and create a bit of a...
I mean,
this is the dishwasher thing, is it?
It was the dishwasher thing, of course.
Yeah,
that's why you got a smack in the back of the head.
Yeah, we're even. It wasn't even the back of the head, it was right there. So
I nearly got in trouble for that dishwasher comment as well, even though you made it.
Guilty by association, Murphy.
I got told, if you ever call me a dishwasher, I said, Skell's a dishwasher.
Let's leave it there before we cause any divorces along the way. Thanks everyone for joining us on the live pod. We'll be back next week with a semi-final preview. Members pod for anyone who is an OTB member coming tomorrow. Of course, the hurling pod is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. You can even see the lads on their social media at the moment, picking out their hurlers of the year and who's going to be the final two that gets to the final. So that's all there. You can look at that as well. We shall talk to you again next week. James Skell, thanks a million.
See you, folks.
Paul Murphy, thanking you.
Thanks very much, lads.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.